listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. Our guest at this hour each week, I'm very privileged to say, is Diana West, the longtime syndicated columnist who now blogs with great effect at dianawest.net. She is the author of two best-selling books, Death of the Grown-Up and American Betrayal. You can also find her writings in outlets like the Daily Caller these days, and it's always a pleasure to have her with us. Diana, good to have you. Welcome back.
Wonderful to be with you.
Well, we've just been talking with our friend and colleague Stephen Coughlin about a phenomenon that has, I believe, accurately been described in this explanatory memorandum of the Muslim Brotherhood, dated 1991. There is, as you know, Diana, a considerable effort to, as they say, debunk that tract and its relevance to the challenges that we're facing. And I wanted, you know, to tie in some of your insights, particularly with what happened to this country and others during the heyday of Soviet communism, and arguably is still being afflicted by the effects of its legacy. Namely, is there really a reason to be concerned about conspiracies that operate to penetrate and subvert our civil society and other institutions from within?
Oh, the easy answer is yes, in spades. The real concern, though, I think at this stage is how dead we are to the concept, how insensate we've become to the whole suggestion. The reflex is to laugh, to scoff, and to turn around and point fingers at the person who might be bringing up extremely important, weighty evidence. And indeed, this again is kind of a mechanism that sent me into the writing of American Betrayal, which is an excursion through the suppression of conspiracies, of malign actors seeking to overturn our constitution and way of life in those days coming out of the communist movement, the Communist Party, Soviet KGB, etc.
Our guest is Diana West. You can find her collected works at dianawest.net, and you were making the very important point about our historical experience and its relevance to the future. Talk about that.
Well, I think the lesson that I would draw is not only that this kind of intelligence war waged by the Soviet Union against our country covertly through the placement of Soviet agents and assets into our government and related institutions. We have a documented over 500 of these agents and assets, according to the scholarship, but there are many, many more. It's not simply that they existed, but you have to look at the record of the United States government in suppressing their existence. And this would be an executive branch effort. Certainly, we see from Roosevelt to Truman to Eisenhower and forward, there's always the effort to suppress these kinds of revelations. And I think what's also important is to understand the long arc of this attempted subversion of this country in terms of the explanatory memorandum. And what I mean by that is in terms of people with guides, how-to guides, really, and densely detailed explanations and orders about how to infiltrate. And this will go back to, there was a very famous raid I only learned about in recent times, in the last year or so, in 1922, where Fed, state, and local raided a communist conclave in Michigan and were able to cart away barrels. In those days, we didn't have thumb drives and things like that. Barrels of documents coming out of the Soviet Union being disseminated by communist networks in the United States that essentially laid out how to infiltrate everything from the local women's club, you know, trying to raise money for relief efforts to relieve famine in Moscow, et cetera, or in Russia, to the government. So this kind of thing has been going on forever, or at least 100 years.
How has that practice under the communists informed what the civilization jihadists, to use the term in the explanatory memorandum, are doing in America and elsewhere today?
I think that the lesson there and what we can see carried forward is the use of front group. And people don't really understand what a front group is or how it functions. You'll say, oh, well, there are only a few Muslim Brotherhood people in this entity, or there are only a few communists in this entity. It's filled with all kinds of respectable and important and wonderful people as well. So how can you even be talking about this? But that betrays an ignorance of how the front group works. A very small group, it can be as few as one, two, or three learns how to take over the direction of a group, learns how to use Trojan horse style, the front, to maneuver, to hide, and to influence policymaking. You
know, we see this particularly in operations like the Interfaith Dialogue Movement, don't we?
Absolutely.
Let me turn to a different topic, if I can, quickly, Diana, because we're going to run out of time, but it's directly related, of course. We're watching, as we speak, the electoral process in the Netherlands taking place. Geert Wilders is making a strong run for the leadership of his country. It may not be sufficient to actually secure the government role that he has sought, but nonetheless, it will be evidence of, I think, the sentiment of his people if he performs well, and that seems likely. Talk a little bit about what's going on in the Netherlands at the moment. What's the wellspring of support for Wilders' party, and where you think this is likely to lead, however the outcome turns out?
Well, it is a watershed moment, truly, in the history of not just the Netherlands, but really the Western world. This is a moment where Geert Wilders does stand poised to seize, if not the reins of power, a large part of power. And it comes out of decades of mass immigration, so much of it from the Islamic world, the Third World certainly, and also mass European Union, which has effectively sucked out so much of Dutch wealth and sovereignty to the unelected, unaccountable bureaucrats in Brussels. And these are really the two pegs of his appeal and what have powered him through his whole career. And he is at this point of possible power. And as we've seen him come to this point, we see all kinds of new ramping up efforts against him. We saw the security breaches that were very terrifying earlier last month and so on. But we've also seen him very recently. We've seen rioting by the massive Turkish population of Amsterdam and an absolute crisis between the Netherlands and Turkey, which essentially all the good things that the Dutch government have done in terms of standing up to this effort to coerce the election in the Netherlands by the Turkish government is in reaction to Geert Wilders' strong run and political point of view. I mean, it's really the only backbone the Dutch government has is really by transference from Wilders. So
an implant.
This is
Let me ask you, Diana, when you talk about the Turks' role, it's my understanding that they've been principally focused on trying to get Turkish voters to vote in an election, in fact, a referendum in Turkey to help Erdogan consolidate his power there. Are you suggesting that, in fact, this is as much about trying to influence the election in the Netherlands as well?
I think so. I mean, that's my own. That's one gal's opinion. Mm. I think so as well. I think it's an effort to mobilize the Turkish Dutch, dual nationals who can vote in Holland to vote against Wilders. I think that would certainly be what I would be doing if I was looking at it out of Turkey. This is something that is not unusual. We've seen Erdogan visit Germany, for example, and rally the Turks against any kind of assimilation, which again would be a very political and overt, hostile effort inside a sovereign nation. So we see this kind of thing. And of course, one of Geert Wilders' points is you can't really be a dual national anymore. You've got to choose one or the other. And I think this is part of another piece of why it's coming to a head.
Especially
people want it both ways.
When the common denominator is trying to impose Sharia supremacism, really, on a country like the Netherlands, which Geert Wilders, of course, standing very robustly against. I wish him well. I think you do too, Diana.
Wish you
well as well. Also, thanks so much for joining us today. Come back to us again next week. Next up, we will be speaking with Jim Hansen. We'll take stock with him about the visit of the Saudi Deputy Crown Prince to Washington, North Korea, and more. Right after this.